from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You're going underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit it! Oh, what a hit that was! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the border, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dunn.
Hang it up there!
Episode 562, now in session.
Mark.
So, another good week of things going on in the off season. Which, boy, is an off season different than a season, isn't it?
So much different. I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but the season, is such a sort of clear trajectory and narrative. There's so many set tasks and set times where those tasks need to be done. It almost builds itself as a calendar. I mean, it's a season, right? Games every week, this stuff needs to be accomplished. And of course you have tasks and projects that arc over the whole thing, but
yeah,
you know, they still fit in that context. Now it's like we've wandered off the edge of the map. You know, it's you know, the old maps where it says there be dragons. That's the off season. That's where we are, out in the wilderness a little bit. And you try to I think these first few weeks, for me anyway, it feels like really getting my feet back under me and all of the things that we need to do and trying to organize myself in that direction again. I don't know if you feel that way, but
no, I was sleeping while you were talking, so I don't know. So here's what we're gonna talk about today.
We're jumping right into what we're talking about.
No, I'm just talking about what we're
going to
talk about.
You're trying to get ahead of us.
I'm not getting ahead of us.
Okay. I like to banter a little.
We're going to We're going to jump over and then jump back.
Okay? Oh, man.
Okay?
I'm not that agile.
I want people to know what we're talking about because they might tune out.
You think they'll give up because we're just...
Shut up. First thing is we're going to talk about why Misty Copeland is not an athlete.
That's not actually what we're going to talk about at all.
Well, it's the teaser line.
That's a terrible teaser line.
While she is just nowhere close to an athlete.
We are going to talk about Misty Copeland.
The ballerina who, yep. If you don't know who that is, you should Google that right now.
My lord.
You definitely want to see who she is.
Just put some videos of her dancing on in the background and it will elevate this whole conversation we'll go from whatever this is to art.
The second thing we're going to talk about is Worlds, some things about Worlds.
Yeah, a little, just small things. I don't think either of us have had a chance to watch a ton of it.
You've watched a lot of it?
I haven't watched as much of it, but I have a couple of things that I can
We're going to talk about some things. And then lastly was we have a little more cufflinky thing about a meeting we had with a gentleman named Randy.
We got to leave it at that.
And I should say that if you listen to one segment, I think the segment about Randy, if you're into the business of sports, you want to hear that segment.
Yeah.
That was a conversation that he is one of a kind, really, in the sports world.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen things that nobody's seen. He knows things that nobody knows. And he gave us some insight on running a sports league that's pretty neat.
He's sage-like in a way, but kind of a humble sage, which I liked. Not that cocky about it, but a nice guy. And really cool stuff out of him.
He was cool.
Yeah.
He was cool. So we'll get into that. So first thing, unless you have something you want. You said you like to banter.
I don't know why you want to rush right in. Yeah, but now it feels weird to go anywhere else.
To go backwards?
To go, what else are we going to say now at this point?
You don't want to talk about that thing that you found on the place?
The thing on the side of the road? We're not telling everybody about that yet.
Okay. All right.
So I'll say a couple little things, a couple kind of fun things that we're working on the side of all this stuff or in the midst of all this stuff. I've been working a little bit with the production team on MLU Films, so we're hoping to put that together for them so that we can offer some film and video services in the off season.
Yeah,
because we have a lot of equipment and expertise that should be working. So not just for Ultimate, though clearly that's our specialty and what we prefer, but I think they'll be doing some other stuff and honing their skills in the off season, getting better. So if people have live sports broadcast needs, we're here for you. And then we have, I think a bunch of fun little side projects in terms of we've been talking about for a couple of days how we're branding our field up next year, because I think we were all so excited by the way the championship game looked that we're going to try to put our huge staff of special projects people on developing
Highly qualified. They're more special than most.
They're very special.
So
they're very special. They know the way to Home Depot.
Yep.
And Lowe's.
And Lowe's.
And we're going to be experimenting with some, I think, some interesting field presentation ideas. So those are a couple of things that I'm kind of excited about.
Yeah. Now let me. We're going to put 2 minute time, 3 minute timer, a 4 minute timer. That's the most.
Five and a half.
I'll go to 5.5 if you want, but maybe six.
Maybe six.
I liked how Sky did the thing in Worlds. They did the streaming, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't like that it cost money. I thought it cost too much money, but I understand. They got to do their thing, so whatever.
Everybody has a different model.
These are things I wouldn't have noticed without you, but I can't. The camera angles makes me. I'm watching it on a 70-inch TV. And I,
you have a 70-inch TV.
70-inch TV.
Whew, my gracious.
It's actually really old. It's like a 70-inch 480i.
It's 70 inches wide and 120 inches deep. Right? Is that the one?
Don't embarrass my TV has feelings. Okay. Yes. And it has a light bulb in there that when you change it, if the TV's been off for 7 hours, it's still 624 degrees.
So, makes you feel safe.
Yeah,
it
heats the house. So, like, we actually were like, why is the house so warm? It's like, because the TV, turn the TV off. Yeah. So, anyway, the camera angle is too far away. And I get it because you're trying to appeal to Frisbee people. And
right.
As a coach, I would want the, what do we call it? Full field cam?
It's the coach's cam, the coach all cam. 14.
Yeah, I like that. All 14
I like
cam.
I
would
yep.
like that. Cause
Which
then,
is, again, something we would very much like to do at some point. But,
sure.
But not for...
It's cool, but not for when you present it. Because I know more than most, I would say, about like who's playing and stuff. Or at least I know I'm in the mix.
You're
time.
In the mix. You're in there.
And I can't tell what's going on. Like, you know, it swings over and then they're so far away. And, you know, broadcast, it's like, take football. Like, everybody, it's one of those things where you think you know what you're talking about, but you don't. You look at football. I would so much prefer, as a huge football fan, that they would zoom out so I could see the cornerbacks and the safeties. Because that is, to me, one of the most enjoyable things to watch. Their chemistry, their mechanics, pre-snap, and then post-snap, right? But they don't show them, because then I'm going to watch a bunch of ants on the field, and I don't get that connection with the players.
Right.
And if you look at soccer, which is probably the most zoomed out,
mm-hmm.
they are cutting into players' faces so often to keep that connection going with the people that you're watching. And I love that about our production. And I really wouldn't. You know, sometimes you got to not listen to your customers, because even though they think they know what they want, I don't think they do. It's you're losing the connection with people too much. And they did a good job. They did. But I just I just lost track of what was going on. And I can't, here's my last gripe. You also can't tell how sweet some things are. Somebody makes a break throw, and you're so far, you don't know that throw was dirty.
It was
special. And I think that's a part of, you know, why football is that way too. Like, you want to see the mechanics of the quarterback. You want to see the how close that blitzer is to the quarterback. It really brings it in, and you can't see any of that, and it frustrates me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's trade-offs, right? Everything is built on trade-offs. Yes, you miss some of the downfield action, but you get to see some handler footwork. You get to pick up a closer view of those exact plays, and I think where you're most right is you get a sense of attachment to players as individual personalities and characters.
Yeah, you have to
see. You know, football shoots so close and so tight because they have the biggest problem with that, right? All their guys are wearing helmets. And Paz, you can't tell who anyone is if you get more than, you know, a tiny bit away from them.
Yeah.
So they really push the camera in tight to get more of that close-up action.
You don't realize how much a person's face matters to you while you're watching something.
Mm-hmm.
Look, watch football now. Go watch it. It's coming on tonight, I think. When are we putting this up?
Is there football on tonight?
Well, tonight. Whenever you listen to this.
I think I'm going to get this up this afternoon.
Yeah. No, but whenever you are listening to this, no matter when you're listening to this, I'm pretty sure that there's football on tonight.
There's probably football.
Okay.
Somewhere out there there's football on.
Now you're going to watch. And watch, just count the number of times it's on a face. It's constant.
Yeah.
A play happens, cuts to the person's face, who made a play or didn't make a play. Because you attach to that. Like, oh, man, look at it. Frustrated, happy, pumped up, pissed. It gets you into it. And that stuff we talk about. The more you get into it, the more you attach. And it's not just about watching a sport. It's about attaching to a sport. So that's my
And I think that's a great, I mean, it's a great thing for us to keep in mind, too, when we go into next season in our production, is how do we get more of that into our production? And, you know, we're limited, as is Skyd, with the cameras the number of cameras that they have available. I mean, watching the World Cup this year, it was like they would do those cutaways to 10 different people's faces in super slow motion. And it was ridiculous.
Remember I argued about that. Can you hear that? If you can hear that through the microphone,
I believe that somebody may be getting beaten upstairs.
The MLU office is a great place to work. And you can, if you can hear the background, then you know. We'll just leave it with this. It's why we're implementing the nose cam for the next season, way you're just on, you can see someone's nose and how it's working.
Just really, really close up. It's a GoPro mask kind of thing that we've developed. Faces directly straight in.
It's not transparent because we couldn't get that, but it's like translucent. So they should still be able to catch with it in front of their
nose.
No,
it'll be nice. It'll be good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on. So you're going to be a good cop and I'll be bad cop.
Oh, jeez.
I have so many things. we're going to talk about, or maybe I'm good cop and you're bad cop. Or I'm kind cop and you're mean cop. I don't know.
I think the likelihood of either of us being cops in this situation is relatively some good, bad, indifferent.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about Misty Copeland. Yes. And actually, Brian Flaherty posted something that got our attention, which was, look up the Misty Copeland Under Armour commercial and you will see a woman that has a physique that is just out of this world.
Incredibly athletic. Body type, like, has obviously just works very hard at what she does.
And the way it starts off, you told me you're a dancer. You beat me in a dance competition.
I did. That, yep.
The base to everything is ballet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really, people say, I don't understand. Can you give me the pitch on why that matters?
You know, I actually studied a little bit of dance when I was younger. And, you know, the first thing that you learn is ballet. So you learn your ballet positions because basically all of the other types of dance are built off of that foundation and structure. So,
to explain
jazz,
just a little,
tap.
What does that mean, though? The your foot position, you move your feet?
Your foot position. It's almost a language. You got to think about it like a language. So, stand in first position. That's where we're going to start. You need to know what that means in order to do anything beyond that.
So, you would stand in fifth position in jazz?
Yeah, they have similar, right? Okay. But the other thing, too, is it builds the foundational structure of turning your feet out. The strength, the kind of jumping ability, the fitness. It's just sort of a baseline level of training. And it usually starts with ballet, in my experience. And again, I'm no expert on dance by any means.
Well, you're the best dancer in the office.
Well, you know, that's not a...
That's a big deal.
High bar.
No, that's a big deal. So it starts off with her going up on point, right? And it doesn't actually look possible.
Yeah, have you ever tried... To go
of course, everyone's
tried.
I mean, I've tried. I haven't tried.
It's painful. It's terrible for your feet too. I'm pretty sure. But
they showed the pictures of the feet with the.
My goodness. Point is a much higher graduation above basic ballet. Like that's where you get into the real deal stuff, and there's no doubt. I mean, she's incredible, and they tell us in her bio that one of the things, and this is probably one of the most impressive things about her, is she didn't start dancing until she was 13.
13. What is that?
That's insane.
You never hear about it.
I've never heard anything like that before in my life. Every dancer that I've known, and I've known a lot of them through involvement, again, in theater and doing some dance stuff, they start when they're two. That's where they get going. And especially anybody that makes it.
I mean, you hear the variations. Do you want to give an on-field mic shout-out for Luke Ryan came in.
Luke Ryan.
He came in with coffee.
In the house, brought me a coffee.
You can follow him at MLU Luke R. He's got very good stats things.
He's a stats guru.
For a complete
sorts.
Idiot. Really.
Amazing.
An outstanding amount of insight.
Yeah.
I did everything you wanted me to say.
The number of numbers that are in his head have driven out his speaking ability. That part of his brain has sort of fallen apart. So she started really young. Amazing dancer. Since this has all come up, I've been able to watch a bunch of YouTube stuff, and it's beautiful. Just beautiful, impressive.
So the thing that Brian Flaherty brought up was that there's an honor we have in front of us. It says, ballerina Misty Copeland proves that dance is a sport in Under Armour ad. And it really made Brian Flaherty mad, and it makes me mad. It's a stupid thing to say. You know, and we had this argument. I said that I don't think that Misty Copeland is an athlete. I'm not trying to insult Misty Copeland. I'm saying that she's a dancer. And I associate athlete with people who play sports, and she's a dancer. Her physical accomplished, like what she can do is outrageous. So I'm not saying you're not an athlete. It's a classification. I'm not insulting her. She's incredible.
You're just trying to be provocative.
I am not trying to be provocative.
I would argue that an athlete is a collection of traits and abilities. It has nothing to do with how they're applied. You can be a plumber and be an athlete because you're athletic. So you're an athlete. And you go play whatever games you play or do whatever you do. Are you an athlete? You play some sports. I mean, she may play some sports.
I'm not sure. Things keep blowing out the back.
I know, you're having
it's like, if you have a car and it can't drive, is it a car? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what I am anymore.
I don't know. It's kind of a... Yeah, Jeff came in this morning, by the way. The office team is playing a little bit of Ultimate on Wednesday nights.
We're playing a PSN league.
And
it's been great.
And Jeff came in this morning with a good limp on, as he pretty much has after literally every bit of physical activity we've done.
I played pretty darn well when they threw it to me standing still. Now, okay, so whatever. You bring up a good point. I don't want to argue that she's not an athlete, but to me, it's... First of all, you're going to agree with me on this. The thing saying that dance is a sport is the dumbest thing. Dance is dance. It doesn't need to... Sport is not better than dance. It's just different. And there's no... Dance is not striving to be a sport.
I think what this reflects is it reflects a value shift in our culture, which is, I think, upsetting to people who work as hard as Misty does at what she does. You know, there should be pride to be saying that you're an artist. You're a dancer. You're an artist. Dance isn't a sport. It's an art. It's an expressive art form. And it's a physically expressive art form. And it's beautiful. And I think the fact that dancers feel the need to be recognized as athletes participating in a sport shows not that, you know, they're desperate to be part of the sports culture, but shows that our culture has shifted its attention away from the arts in some way. And it's getting harder to get that recognition as a performing artist than it would be if you were participating in a sport.
What? do you think dancers are getting less credit than they were getting years ago? I feel like they're getting more. They're being seen as more and more, of an athlete, I guess, of a physical specimen. I think it's more of an insecurity of saying, see, this is sports. Of not her. I don't think she has the insecurity. Whoever wrote this article has this insecurity. It's like, see, it's just as good as sports. She's just as athletic as any other athlete.
In fact, probably in many ways more athletic.
Right, because dancing is you can tell what a body, how a body looks is the demand put on a body. And, you know, bowlers have different bodies, right?
Why do you have to pick on bowlers?
I'm not picking on bowlers. They just have different bodies, you know, than a dancer. Dancers have bodies that are phenomenal. They're phenomenal from head to toe because I mean you dance from head to toe. Like basketball players. Basketball is one of the best physiques because you have this constant endurance of running up a court. You have this body up of, you know, bodies on bodies going for rebounds. You have jumping, and then you have this constant motion of dribbling. So it's your whole body, and that's why you have those physiques that are so outstanding. So dance requires you to be an outrageously physical person.
Yeah, dance is all body control. And the idea of being able to control every single part of your body in any imaginable position. And it's phenomenal. And athletically, it's a great thing to do. For any young athletes out there, do you want to get more nimble, more agile, have better balance and body control? Take some dance lessons.
And be more attractive to the opposite sex.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
There is nobody that doesn't like a man or woman that can dance.
Everybody loves a
dancer. Which really, this was your whole claim to fame. Okay? You just went on the dance floor. You showed off. You were a peacock.
Okay? Oh, yeah, I'm a little...
You're peacockish.
A little peacockish.
Okay.
That sounds terrible. Let's not say that anymore.
You're a peacock. Yeah, you're a good dancer, though. That's it. So, okay. So, I think we can agree on this. Misty Copeland, athlete. I don't want to argue because it's a stupid argument of that term. She's an athlete without question. She's whatever the top...
She's whatever she wants to be.
Yeah.
Phenomenal athlete. I think that the important thing here is that dance isn't a sport, and more importantly, it shouldn't be a sport. Dance is an art, right, and let's respect it as such.
It doesn't.
Of course, it draws you in a whole other level of conversation, which I don't think we'll get into fully here, but it'd be interesting to hear what other people have to say.
Of sports.
Of sports in general. We have a bunch of arts that have gotten translated into sports in a way.
No, they haven't. Gymnastics is not a sport. It's an event. It's judged. Judged events. Solely judged events. Like, I would say boxing is a sport because a knockout ends it. But because you can't just say fight until one of you dies, you have to give it a judged point, right? Fight until someone gets knocked out. Is it just
fight until one of you dies?
Yeah, everyone in the arena smells terrible. It's 3 days later, you know. But gymnastics, again, an outrageously athletic thing. Every time I watch gymnastics and the guys do the Iron Cross on the rings, I kind of have a fantasy about that. I have like Vince Vaughn in
you want to be able to do
in
this.
Old School. Remember, he's smoking the cigarette and he's holding it, and he just says something like, got it. You know? But I want to do that because there's like a fantasy about what those guys can do, because it almost looks like it's not quite real. Like,
you would literally dislocate your spine trying to do it.
Yeah, like anything.
You would.
Like the pommel horse. The pommel horse is one of those things where you're like, no, that's not real. Like, because yeah, it's beautiful.
It's amazing.
It's like anything they do there, they just hold themselves up. And I love the whole thing. And then with gymnastics, one of the ones where the women's events are really quite different, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of them are different. Like, instead of the pommel horse, they have the vault, right?
Which is terrifying.
Instead of the parallel bars, they have the uneven bars.
No, the men have the vault, don't they? Or they do the pommel horse.
Do they have the vault as well? I can't keep track of it. I know. I'm not good at gymnastics.
The bars are different.
Yeah, parallel bars. The uneven bars for the women. Right?
I want the uneven bar. To me, the uneven bars is like the advanced. That's what you should want
to
do.
It's fun to watch.
Because it looks impossible. And I don't know why that is a female thing. I feel like the guys are getting gypped.
Yeah.
Because it would show a much deeper level of skill to navigate two bars as to navigate one. And I don't know why that is that way.
Right. I mean, I think here's the problem. Because you can go on and on about this, right? Is diving a sport? Diving is judged.
It's not a sport.
The thing is, then we get to, is slope style snowboarding a sport?
Nope.
Right?
It's not a sport.
But here's the thing. Does it matter? Like, we're talking semantics.
No, it doesn't matter.
Like, what's the difference, really?
Look,
in the
Socrates
end.
Once said that your
whole
life. I wish
you had a follow up for this.
Yeah, your whole life is semantics. Okay, that's what he said. Semantics are fun to argue. Slopestyle is not a sport for a myriad of reasons, because a guy got a medal with his pants down around his ankles. So none of it makes sense to me. It's okay that it's not a sport. It's not an insult, but a sport has it is a direct competition. And it has a scoring procedure, and it's not judged. It's not, you know, there's no...
Or it's not solely judged. I mean, everything has an element of judgment. I think here's the thing that I feel about it is, the problem is when you say something isn't a sport, it sounds like an insult.
Yeah, it's not an insult. It's just a classification. Bowling is a sport. Bowling's a sport.
Or is bowling a game?
Bowling is a sport.
I think bowling is more of a game of skill.
No, you need a level of... Because that's like saying golf is not a sport. Golf is a
I'm
sport.
I'm not sure. Is golf maybe... I think golf might be a game.
Is golf a game?
I think golf could be a game.
Is pool a sport?
Now, you have advantages from your athletic ability in golf, but it doesn't require the full suite of athleticism. And is that part of being a sport? I mean, it's an interesting discussion to have.
You get murdered by an athlete in any one of those games. That's why I think it's a sport. You get murdered by a great athlete who was a bowler, because his endurance and attention to his physique would make them better. A golfer, like that was Tiger
Woods. I tend to classify those as games of skill. Object into a whole object knocking over other objects. But then you get to ping pong. Ping pong is like tiny tennis. Tennis, clearly a sport. Therefore, ping pong a sport.
Ping pong is a sport.
Ping pong is definitely a sport.
That just sounds weird.
Did you see that one rally, by the way?
Was that...
The Nigerian guy? It was insane. Look up Nigerian ping pong rally on YouTube.
Are we
going
to look
this
it up?
Thing.
Do you want to bring it up?
It's a crazy thing to watch. But yeah, I think, like I said, I think in the end, what I think bothers me is that there's a feel that you need to be a sport to be respected as an athlete and even as a competitor, because you can be very competitive in ballet, right? But it doesn't have to be a sport. That's not the thing that determines your worth, is whether you're considered a sport. Because that's what I don't like about the tone of this article, right? Ballerina Misty Copeland proves that dance is a sport.
Yeah.
Stupid. Like now, it's a sport. Well, that means it's good.
Yeah.
And we should all like it. Like, I don't see the point of that headline.
Yeah. Again, that's an insecurity. We've come full circle, and we've decided, without equivocation, Misty Copeland is not an athlete.
No, we haven't said that.
Oh, man, this is getting confusing. Okay.
She's a phenomenal athlete. And it was really fun that when we decided to talk about this, because I hadn't read much about her or seen much of what she's done, but it's really impressive. You should definitely go check her out.
And then think for a second about the fact that she started at 13, because she was at a minimum 8 years behind everybody else. And read her thing on Wikipedia. I'm pretty sure at 15, she was signed to like a premier ballet company.
Yeah.
So it took her 2 years to beat everybody.
Which, if you've ever been involved in ballet, that's insane. I don't even understand it. I don't know how you can learn all of the things.
Yeah, I don't.
In that amount of time.
I mean, she had to have loved it, right?
Obviously.
I think she was an admirer, and maybe she never got classical training or like true training. But, okay. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to one of my favorite people, somebody who you have publicly said you don't like very much, Brandon Muffin Malachek.
Oh, yeah. Malachek.
Malachek. a phenomenal player.
Phenomenal player. And a fierce competitor.
Perfect competitor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change a thing about him. Let me rewind a bit. Worlds. Was this last 2 weeks. And
what an event. What a massive undertaking, a huge, huge event for Ultimate, obviously.
And two people who are very close to us, Max and Gemma, running the event along with Rusty May, who's with the Dogfish, and three people there that, you know, we hold in the highest of regards.
Such high respect.
And we were really over here bummed to hear some of the stuff that they were going through and really, you know, just pulling for them because Murphy's Law was in effect.
Anytime you're running an event of that size, you're going to have problems, and they had their fair
massive,
share and
massive,
more.
If you don't know, they had massive rainstorms.
Yeah.
So massive that the word was that they hired a helicopter to come in to blow the water off the field.
Which, that's a bummer because it sounds like expensive and all that sort of stuff, but oh my
God. It'd be fun to watch.
I want to see that so badly.
I
didn't know you could do that.
Of course you can.
Wow. What a world.
In fact, if you get enough people together that need their hair blown,
you can just take care of that.
You just take out it. You can take like hair like 50 people at once, blow drying hair.
There may be some cost savings there.
If you do the math,
challenge the electricity costs. Yeah. We'll have to look into that. New business model.
The town aqueduct had some issues, so they ran out of water in the town. So it just, and I think it kept piling up. Some of the things they had to put up with.
Yeah, for those that don't know, this is over in Italy.
Over in Italy, Lecco, Italy.
Lecco, Italy.
And here's the thing. Max and Gemma, nobody would have known from the outside. I mean, it was fun to watch. It was fun to see how everything went. You know, we were reading articles and hearing all this stuff, and it was enjoyable. And the only reason I know about this stuff is because I know about this stuff, you know.
Yep.
So really phenomenal job on all that. Some really good competition. I bought the pack from Skyd,
right,
and watched some film. We watched some here. I watched the Buzz Bullets, which is the Japan team, versus Ironside, which is the Boston.
We're gonna jump right into the
in?
Kind of my big downer note of the whole thing was seeing this game.
I mean, this isn't it's always discussion for some people. Always want to talk about refs and all this stuff, which is, it's kind of funny, you know. It's such a boring conversation. I don't know. Sooner or later, I think you just get bored of it because you know that this whole self-officiation thing is just a dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, we have the conversation all the time. And, you know, we saw it in the World Games last time around, and we certainly saw it in this game. I mean, there's just an obviousness to it.
There's this check mark thing that I did thinking about it. And I was going to talk about it and get into it. I'm going to get into it for a minute because I don't care. I just don't care. I'm not trying to convince anybody. Because there's so few that need to be convinced. So many people get it. But if you just take things like bad calls and say, are bad calls made when you're self-officiated or when you're reffed? And you just go down the list of all the things that happen, they're all the same.
Yeah.
The only real difference that I can come up with is that the burden on players, one burdens players to make these calls, one doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
One has this kind of hero moment mystique thing it's going for, and one isn't. One isn't going for I laid out and caught it, but my foot was on the line, and I'm going to call myself out. That has, you know, that's what self-officiating is going for. Right?
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Right, they're going for this hero moment of like...
It's a hero moment, the right word.
Yeah, I'm doing something that is not in the best interest of my team.
Kind of nobility.
Yeah, a noble, like this nobility thing, which never happens. I shouldn't say that. It happens, but it's irrelevant.
It happens.
It certainly, the other stuff happens more.
Yeah, it's...
And then I would also say a general player safety. There's just, you need somebody on the field to control a game. But
yeah, I have some stories about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But here, let me paint the picture for you as I remember it. Ironside is up 16-15 against Japan in pre-quarters. Japan has the disc. They're on offense. And they make a throw, and I think Jack Hatchett or maybe Alex Simmons, I can't remember who, gets a D. And the commentator on Sky, who I think was Liam Rosen, or the guy, No Looks Cooper, Brian, one of them said, that was a terrible call.
Oof.
And you can't handle those things.
I couldn't. I couldn't take watching it. Ugh.
It was terrible. And the problem with it was that it ruins the game for me. It's like, you know, one of the things that's so enjoyable about the MLU is that we're always talking about the game itself, the whole game. We're never talking about this player who's a jerk because they messed up a call, right? And let me make my statement. I don't blame the Japanese player at all. He's trying to win. They're doing the best they can. He has no idea what's going on. It was a split-second thing, and he made a terrible call.
Just right? Awful.
But there's no doubt in my mind. And if it was a ref call, you know, I can live with that.
Yeah,
I mean, can live with a ref call.
That same bad call could be made by a referee. But you know what? The other thing about it is when you watch this game, you have so much time to think about the call because they're literally talking about it for 7-8 minutes. Like somebody else comes on the field to translate between the two players who are talking about it. And it's just going, they're reenacting it.
Why does it make us angry? There's an anger that comes out when we're watching it. And I was thinking about this. Why am I angry when I see this? And I think it's because the whole reason I wanted to be involved in the MLU was I want the sport, when it's talked about, to talk about the people. And the self-officiation makes it talk about the rules. It's like the rules are the hero. And that's all it ever seems to talk about. Look, that person followed the rules. That person did good with the rules. Instead of that person on that field is awesome.
Yeah.
And it ruins it for me. It really does ruin it for me. Ironside should have won the game, not because...
Twice.
Yeah, not because of whatever. They literally got a bad call. That was a big D. I think they pick it up. It looks like on film that they're going to make some things happen. And it's over. And now here's my other problem. While it's over, while this conversation is going on, it was 8 minutes of rest. That's the worst thing for me ever, right?
Yeah, it changes the whole context of the game. I mean, part of that time in a game, that end of a game, is your fitness. That's where the fit team makes it. And now you have this 8-minute break where people are just standing around waiting for this call to get decided. It takes all the wind out of it.
Yeah.
All the drama of the game kind of disintegrates around it. And it doesn't tell the same story to me.
It does make a drama, though.
Well, it's a kind of drama.
It makes a drama, but it's an upset
drama. Kind of a reality
drama.
Show drama.
You can actually hear, if you like reading comments or listening to commentators, there's an anger to it, right? And to me, I don't mind anger, like if you're picking sides, but it's like, it's almost like, it's a bad zone to be in. It's a negative feeling. So this is what happens. 16-15, Simmons gets the D. Gets the D. It's overturned. Or it's no overturn. It just goes back.
They argue for a while, and they send it back.
Because that's
so nothing happens.
Which I would be fine. You know what? I would be fine with self-officiating if there were no takebacks. If it just had to be one or the other, I could live with it.
If we're really trusting people to make their own calls,
Why has it got to go back?
Then there shouldn't be contests.
Yeah.
We all believe in each other's spirit and integrity. Then you better make a call. Because a lot of times I feel like people will make a call because they don't feel as bad about it because they know the other person's going to contest it.
And it goes
and
back.
And then it's going to go back.
Yeah.
Whereas if they had to make a call that was going to stand no matter what, that might give them pause. Let me even think about it.
Agreed
and
completely.
I think it fits more, if you want to stand on this, if WFDF wants to stand on this self-officiation thing as strongly as they do, it fits more with that mentality.
Yeah.
We believe that everybody is going to act with the utmost integrity at every moment. Therefore, any call that's made stands automatically.
It's like that scene from A Few Good Men.
Oh, boy.
When Jack Nicholson says, I feared for his safety, and Tom Cruise jumps on and goes, you just said your orders are followed. So if your orders are followed to a T, why the need to protect him, right? It's like if everyone's going to follow the rules, why the need for this contest system? Anyway, I don't want to get into it because it's never going to make sense.
Oh, I enjoyed that one, though. That was fun. But go ahead.
The Tom Cruise-y?
No, well, that was nice,
You're
too.
A huge Tom Cruise
well.
Fan. Okay. So 16-15, they score. Then it comes back, and now Ironside on offense works it down. Jake Anderson makes a really poor pass, really poor swing pass. It looks like the Japanese defender made him maybe stretch out a little more, made him think about it, and he turfs it. Brandon Malachek, who we've said is really one of people we admire most on the field, makes a layout D that is just phenomenal.
Gorgeous.
You could watch it over and over. I could watch it over and over. Brian Cantor, or somebody from Ulti Photos, captures an incredible picture.
Oh, the picture's beautiful.
Which we're going to have, we're going to have Sean Carpenter on next week.
We are.
Ulti Photos photographer, to really give some tips. We have questions for him, because I don't understand how they do what they do. And there's a foul call, and Malachek is upset, right? The coach is upset. Josh McCarthy, a fantastic coach. He's upset. Now, they can't talk about it until the translator goes out there, but the issue is that Malachek is so upset because he knows that the best he can get is a do-over, right?
Right.
And you can tell, I can see it, that his frustration is that I can't fix this. This is a D or not a D. And, it was a close call. So it wasn't that bad of a call. It just is frustrating to him.
Yeah.
But the point is, he knows it's going back and that's bad, right? That's really bad.
Yeah,
because
it's such a...
You're not going to get it again.
As a defender... I would almost rather have them have the disc there. Like, it's so unwinds the game and unwinds the tension that's built up to send it back.
Yeah.
It's immensely frustrating. And I remember how frustrating that feels, because I've certainly had my share of calls go against me when I'm playing and have to have seen them go back to the thrower. And it's, it feels like such almost a slap in the face. Like, not only do we take that D away from you, but now we're going to let them throw it again from back here. You know, I don't know. It's just a hole. It feels bad for some reason.
You're absolutely right. I felt that way too. When I was guarding someone who was better than me in the air, right? I'm like, this person's better than me in the air. And they throw it deep and I get the D. But there's a foul call. And you're like, that 50-50 I won, right? But I know the next one I won't. That person's, they're better.
I'd rather have them have the disc.
Right. So the problem is that now that it's gone back, I've lost my odds, right?
Right.
Now it's playing against me. So my whole thing is they put in these game advisors. I'll be critical of the World Flying Disc Federation. You need some brand awareness here. You need to think about how things are presented, because I'll be very honest, without trying to be critical, I hope it's taken as I'm being critical because I care, and
yeah.
I'd like to see it improve, not because any other reason. But I wouldn't show anybody who I was, who's affiliated in sponsorship or partnership or anything like that with the MLU. I wouldn't show them the World Games, and as the MLU, we didn't promote the World Games because it didn't translate
worlds.
To me.
You mean worlds, yeah,
worlds because. There are game advisors with yellow shirts that weren't tucked in. There's players in all sorts of different uniforms. There's no uniform requirements. There's no sideline requirements for how it's put together. And this is on the World Flying Disc Federation to tighten that up so that it looks like something. So you're like, okay, that looks like a sport played at a high level. And it really doesn't look like that at all.
Yeah, and it's a shame because the play is at a phenomenally high
level.
So that's the other thing to say about that game. The game, the last point was painful in the Buzz Bullets Iron Second because it went on forever.
Way too long.
Travel calls, arguments, foul calls. Every time somebody threw a goal, you knew it was coming back out.
Yeah.
You know, it was just really, really rough to watch. And that's a shame because the teams are so good.
They're unbelievable.
So good. The players are so good. Yeah. That the points where it ran smoothly, it was beautiful to watch. And you just wanted a whole game like that, end to end. And I think that goes for what you're saying, too. All the branding across the event, the way teams are dressed, the way they are carrying themselves on the sidelines, who can come on or off the field at a given time, all this stuff, the officials, game advisors. I don't know what they can do or can't do. But
apparently they could help on in-and-out calls.
Okay.
Yay.
So you could ask them on an in-and-out call.
You could ask them on an in-and-out call, but they couldn't tell you anything about a foul.
So it's they're dipping their toe into officiation.
Right. It'll be reffed.
So that's what's... I think that's where my anger comes out of it when I watch it, is it's so frustrating to not be able to see these guys play how they played. The other thing that someone was commenting on that looked frustrating for Revolver and for Ironside was that these guys are so fast and so athletic that they kept running out of room. Everybody's like, they keep running out of room when they're making cuts toward the sideline because they get there too fast. There's not time for the thrower to turn and hit them. And, you know, that's a timing problem maybe, but it's also the field size problem. I would have never noticed that as much in the past, but I definitely notice it now.
I notice it now too. It's funny. It's the full size field is just the field to play on for spectating. It's more fun to watch. We just played in that PSN league, and it has 10-yard end zones on a smaller turf field, and it's hard. You know, we're playing some teams that weren't very good. It's still hard to score because you can literally pack it full of defenders.
Yeah.
So it's a more strategic game. So from a playing point of view, I don't think I would care playing on either field because it just changes the strategy.
It's just a different game.
But from watching, I just love seeing somebody who's on an island alone and a defender who's like, okay, well, I got to do something because this person, there's no one's going to help me with this. They're too far away from everybody. Going back to the Worlds thing, just for a couple more points, though, is for the World Flying Disc Federation, which again, right, Rob came down and came to our championship game, so I think we're fans of each other.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah, good guy. Not trying to say anything, you know, not trying to be mean about it.
No.
But create a brand document. Tell the because you're asking players or teams to do things that they don't know how to do.
Right.
So you have to do it for them. You have to say, here's what you're supposed to look like. If you're going to wear headbands, all wear the same headband. If you're going to wear hats, wear the same hat.
At least the same color.
I hate the hats. You made me hate it.
This makes me so happy.
The different hat, the team with five players with their hats on backwards, again, I wouldn't show anybody it because you can't put a finger on it when you're watching it, but when you put it all together, it just looks like a backyard game. If you tighten up the brand, tighten up the sideline, and made your officials look like officials, boy, would that change a lot.
If you don't hand them any, because I know they're always going to be pushback, even if you don't hand them any power, like make them look like they belong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make them look official.
Yeah.
A shirt untucked down to your, you know, covering half of your shorts looks ridiculous. It looks sloppy. Don't make them look sloppy. Make them look sharp. These are very good people. One of them was, I forget his name already. One of them's Byron Hicks. He works for USAU. And the other one's Greg Connolly. I mean, these guys have been around the game for a long time. These are respectable people. Make them look sharp. Tell them to look sharp so they look sharp.
Yeah.
And if you're... Now, everybody's shirt was untucked. So if that was the directive, then fire that person.
I don't have a problem with untucked shirts.
Well, it looked terrible.
No, well, it has to be
untucked,
a shirt.
Untucked, fitted shirt?
It has to be a shirt that's made to be untucked, like the ones we had this
year. Yeah, of course, no official in the land ever and anywhere has a untucked shirt.
Well, we're talking about officials, They tend to be a little more of a stoic bunch.
Yeah. Now, and so jumping to the Sockeye Revolver game, because we'll end on that, we got a minute to talk about this. Phenomenal game. Those two play, for all intents and purposes, very spirited. They really get along on the field, which is impressive because you never saw them bending the rules, which again is impressive at that level. And they're phenomenal. They're just phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's a crazy game.
Very good teams to watch. No question about it. The one note I'll make on that, and I hesitate a little bit to bring this up, but there was a little Twitter, I don't know what I would call it, an argument, just a little, like, snippiness, because UltiWorld put out a thing that said, now it's time for the main event, you know, Sockeye versus Revolver, and got jumped on immediately by people who were like, what do you mean the main event? This is the men's final, the women's final is just as main event as that, and the mixed final is just as main event as that, right? And the best comment, it might have been Kyle Weisbrot who wrote, if you mean man event, then you'd be correct. Which I don't necessarily agree with the sentiments, but I thought was incredibly clever.
Well, you know that Kyle and I agree on everything.
Yeah, I know that. I know. You guys,
so I agree.
You guys get along very, very well.
There's two things there. One, UltiWorld can say whatever they want. I would agree if USAU said the main event that they're wrong. They have a gender equity policy.
Precisely.
And they can't say that. They
precisely.
Have to say, but UltiWorld can say whatever they want. And it's, I don't think anybody's arguing that the most... It's obviously the most watched thing. It's why it's on prime time, and that's why everybody bought that one. And, you know,
they always. I mean, USAU has a gender equity thing. They have to approach that carefully. They have to balance that all out, and they have to provide the same opportunities. They still always put the men's game in the prime slot, and it makes sense because it gets the most views. I don't think there's any doubt that it gets the most views. It happens like that in every sport. You know, you look at the Olympics, gymnastics, which we spoke about earlier. The women's gymnastics competition is massively more popular than the men's gymnastics competition. And while the Olympics provides the same facilities and the same structure for both of those events, television time for the women's thing is prime time, off the charts.
Yep.
Tons of packaging around it, tons of interviews. And that's just the way it is. It doesn't matter. Your organization can do whatever they want in terms of equity, but the press, broadcasters, and the public are going to decide what's most important. So as much as UltiWorld, I have a complicated relationship with UltiWorld and I don't like to be on their side necessarily all the time. I'm on their side in this one. It's the main event as far as their coverage is concerned of it. So,
okay. I got one more gripe, even though we're going a couple minutes over. This is something that is just silly and, tournament organizers or whatever the rules needs to adjust this. You can't play to points. You can't say we played a points and have a game be timed. It means the game is timed. Because if you're timing the game, right, if you're playing to points, for instance, baseball is played to 9 innings. It isn't 9 innings or 3 hours. You don't cap a baseball game. It goes until you're done through those 9 innings, and then someone has a winning score, right?
Didn't they have like a 5.5 hour game last week? Did you see that one?
I didn't see that, but they've had 23
innings. It went to like the 19th.
Yeah.
20th, they've had this 21st
stuff,
inning.
They've had this stuff happen because this game is not played to time.
Yeah.
Tennis is not played to time. What is Isner and whatever that dude is, it played 100 games, whatever
just
it was.
They were playing for years.
It's not a timed game. So.
They might still be playing.
Ultimate, in all levels, our levels, it is a timed game because we're just putting a clock up. But in, you know, the worlds, it's a timed game. However, there's a mercy rule, really, which is if you hit 17, then you get to stop playing, right? And winning by two. And to me, it's a weird message. Who cares about 17? Let's just play to the time. You have an hour and a half play to it. And that is a timed game. Because when you cap it, to me, it's like you're not playing to a score. You're playing to a time. And if you get to a score before that time, you get to mercy rule the person. It's a mercy rule.
Right, yeah.
And I don't like it. Because people even have said to us, why don't you go to a – you should go to points instead
of
time.
Which I think would be reasonable. We didn't do that, and we have our reasons for it, but you could reasonably do that.
Sure.
The problem is you could end up with a 3 hour game because there's no way, there's no way it's fair to cap it because it's not fair on either team.
Right,
to
you can't
cap it.
If you're playing to points, you play to points.
Yeah.
If you're playing to time, you play to time. So to make it really clear, people who think Ultimate's played to points, they're completely wrong. It's played to time. But there's a mercy rule.
There's
to
a skunk rule. There's a
And that mercy rule could be as little as winning by 2 points or as much as winning by 10 points. It really is just a mercy rule. And to me, I don't like it. This is a world competition. They had the clock next to it. I like for tournament frisbee a 90-minute clock. It's just like soccer, right? 45 minutes steady play.
Mm-hmm.
10-minute halftime. 45 minutes. Man, that's cool. Now there's pressure from time.
Yeah, it's a running clock. And here's the other thing I don't like about it. In tournament play, it's rewarding teams that can win quickly too much.
Yeah.
So not only is your path easier because you're playing a team that you can beat more easily, but your path is easier because you get a bigger break between rounds.
Yeah.
So more rest. And so in a tournament, you're over-rewarding that kind of performance.
Yeah. Let's remember in this Worlds, in the semifinals, Sockeye beat Colony, an Australian team, 17-4. Whereas Revolver beat Johnny Bravo, which they're going to have to change that name one day if this yeah, thing that picks up. Boy, they have trademarking
pretty things. Sure that's a trademark problem.
But I'm a big fan of Johnny Bravo. Both Johnny Bravos.
Yeah, I like both of them.
I forget what it was. It was a tight game.
Tight game. So and that's the games to go to the next to round.
So the point is that, you can argue whether it matters or not. It just is a point that they get the extra rest because they only had to play 21 points.
Right.
Where Revolver and Bravo played 35 points. That's almost 50, 60, 70% more. What is that? That's a lot more points.
I don't do that kind of math. No.
So, but if you had to play the same time, at least even if you had to play your bench, at least you had to play somebody. So anyway,
it rewards depth too, right?
Yep.
You reward depth, you reward keeping that deeper bench, training, all that sort of stuff. I fully agree with you on this.
Yeah.
Love to hear what you guys think.
Ultimate's a time game. Well, you can't argue it. Ultimate's a time game. It's not played to points. It's just got a mercy rule.
Yeah, so is the mercy rule okay? That's the question. Or do we just admit that it's a time game?
It's a time game.
So we'd love to hear what you think. At Jeff Snader, at Nick Darling, at Cleats Cufflinks.
Boom.
All the above, however you want to do it.
All right, we have 10 minutes left.
And
we want to talk about this meeting because this is actually...
We've talked that long.
Yeah, we always did. We want to talk about this meeting we had. If you are if you're a fan of the business of sports, this 10 minutes is the best 10 minutes because there's things you could learn.
I think you're overhyping this 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried that we're not going to live up to your hype. This is the greatest
I think about the 10 minutes you'll ever hear. I'm going to tell you about the things he told me that I think about every day.
How many things are we going to talk about? Do you have a list?
No, I just have a couple points that I want
to
bring up.
A couple points. Okay, let's do that.
We met with a guy named Randy.
He
just has an insight like no one else. He has been in acquisitions that were monstrous. He basically, I think the best way to phrase him is he's the Grim Reaper for sports. And he's a guy you should be scared of. Because what he does is wait around until you make your league successful or successful enough, do a poor job of managing it, and then he comes in and takes it from you.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford it anymore.
That's essentially right.
And he turns it around. And so he's the Grim Reaper. And a really nice guy. Really nice Grim Reaper.
The nicest. I don't know if Grim Reaper is the right word. But
it's just how I've thought about it. Like, this is not somebody you want to meet on the other side. You want to meet him. You want
to
be...
Unless you're ready to get out.
Well, yeah. Yeah, unless you... I mean, even though it would still hurt that here, you know, he is going to come in because you didn't run a business. So here's a couple things he said to me. Us. Both of us were there. He said... sports leagues should be able to be wildly successful, but they aren't because people always screw it up. And it's just, you sit back and think, like, no one says that about tech. No one says, you know, tech businesses should really be able to be successful, but they aren't. Tech
right.
businesses just blow up left and right. They get outrageous funding and outrageous revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing he said there, he goes on and says, people try to run it like a sport instead of a business. And it's so hard because sports are so emotional.
There's the key.
And I think that's something that we took a lot of pride in, take a lot of pride in, is that we try to be as unemotional as possible. And that doesn't mean that we don't adore our players.
Right.
There isn't ever a time when a decision's made when we feel good, when we're not giving somebody something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if something simple like the warm-ups. Like, man, those are the really nice warm-ups, but the budget says we can do this.
Right.
So we got to do this. Or this transportation works like this. You know, for the transportation to the championship game for DC, to get everything together for PPL, we had to make some cuts for
mm-hmm.
DC. So they had to come up in a much much worse experience than we would have liked.
Yeah.
And it turned out that it was, after talking with Matt Dewars, it was much worse than we would have liked.
Yep.
It basically came up in broken vans after being bussed around all season. But... we made that decision because it's a business and we have to respect the budget that we have. And that's why we're able to be successful, is seeing a budget and doing our best to be in line with that budget, which is hard.
Very hard.
Very hard. But the more we think like that, the better we do. And the better we get at this budgeting piece the further we go. So those things he said to me were just, you know, you start to see sports differently. It's not, you can't just be sports. And the reason sports get so screwed up is because owners who have lots of money, and he said, sports can humble the wealthiest billionaire.
Yeah, people who have been successful, wildly successful in running other businesses, get into sports, they own a team, they let their emotions override their business sense, and they fail. And this happens again and again and again and again.
There was a football league that was losing $2 million per year per team. And they existed year after year. And these owners
kept going.
Sign back up, throw in $2 million each, and let it run because of the emotion of it. They were all so tied into their team.
Yep.
And they said, this is worth it. I'm just going to keep burning it away, and I make $2 million in my business over here, and I write it the check over there. Which, again, that's fine. That's what they want to do.
It's a hobby. Some people own a fleet of yachts and sail them around the world, and that costs them $2 million a year. You own a team, and it costs you $2 million a year.
It's seen differently, right?
Yeah.
It's not seen as business. Then they got acquired, and now, you know, I don't know the details of everything, but they may have turned the corner because it started to run like a business.
Run substantially differently. Payment structures are all different than they were, more controlled. And, I mean, you've even seen larger leagues take steps in this direction. You think about the NBA's salary cap situation, how they had to kind of correct that stuff because they were spending way too high a percentage of their revenues on salary. And in the end, a well-run business is better for everybody, right? So, you know, your athletes are in the business of making money by being athletes. So they're going to try to get as much as they can. And your partners are going to try to get as much as they can out. And your broadcast people are going to try to get as much as they can without paying as much as they have to. And it's all, if you're not doing the same thing, if you're not playing your role in that tension, that pull on resources, then you're going to collapse and everything else falls down around it. The business has to hold up its end of the deal, which is to run a tight ship, to run a good business. And by holding up that end of the deal, it keeps everybody else in business as well. It keeps your players, your partners, your broadcasters, your media partners, everybody else in business as well. And that's your responsibility.
And, you know, one other great point he made, and this is something I got to give you a lot of credit for. When we started this, we talked about how to create a sports league, which is really, really, it is not simple.
No.
Sports league is not just some simple single entity run as a normal business. It couldn't be further from that. And for those who are, you know, into business, when you start a business, you create a, you know, an LLC and you make an operating agreement.
Yep.
And you say, okay, you own 40% and I own 50 and this guy owns 10 and that's what we're all going to do business. Here's how we make decisions. And you work for a little while and then you all hate each other and sue each other. Now, that is, you know, that's simple. This sports business is not, it's not that at all. There's so many different components. And one of the things he said, which we knew, we started off and said this, he said, sports is not, cannot be a democracy.
Right.
Because they'll screw it up. And when I say they'll screw it up, I mean, whoever is in the position is the they. Let me explain that. Nick and I and Lindy, we're the head of the management group of the MLU, and we manage how things work. And because we are unaffiliated with teams and have the responsibility to manage it, we're able to make decisions in a business setting. If you made us the head of the Philadelphia Spinners, we would be a problem because then we would be working for the Spinners. We'd be competing to make them the best, and we would be a problem.
Yes.
Because we would say, well, we want a little bit more budget over here. Or here's what we're going to do to be better than these guys, because then you're competing. And you need something, you need a management piece that controls that, or else you literally have a bunch of owners who are all out for themselves. And that was probably the biggest reason we created this.
Yeah.
Biggest things we saw in the AUDL. It was all, everybody for themselves. And it's impossible to change that.
And that's the other thing is it, this is not the fault of the people who own teams. And when Randy is saying that you have to run it like a business, not a sport, he's not discounting the value of emotional investment in sports.
Extremely.
You
valuable.
Still need owners who are emotionally invested and competitive and care a lot about their teams. The thing you need, though, is a mechanism for protecting the league from them.
Right.
From
you need what they want
from themselves, and that it's literally it's what I would want as an owner. I don't like. It goes back to trying to make decisions on the field playing Ultimate.
Right.
With you're so emotionally involved in the game, you can't make a rational, correct call.
It's actually really good. That's a really good. It's funny how that you didn't plan that.
I did not plan that. It just popped into my head.
Self-officiated is not having a management group that can control it, and having the refs there controls how everything goes. What is that soccer team, Chivas?
Chivas. Yeah.
Am I wrong that that's a league or a team that's owned by someone who doesn't care about it?
So Chivas is a Mexican league team, and they own a team in the MLS that they use as sort of a farm system.
And they've been run extremely poorly because he's running it like a farm business, a farming business for that team, and it's ruined it. You can't. So he's an example of a bad owner,
right?
Because he's not emotionally invested in his team.
So now the fortune of the MLS is they have a central structure, and they've been able to shelter a lot of things from that, from what I understand.
I mean, it's still the worst.
But it's been a rough road for that team.
They really haven't sheltered. They're the worst in everything.
Yeah, they're pretty sure they're the worst
in attendance. They have a terrible record. And it's because they don't have a requirement, which is an emotionally invested ownership group that is pushing that team.
Right.
So you
need,
they're extremely necessary. And we have fantastic owners.
Yep,
I don't blame any owner for being emotionally invested. The point is that you can't. That there need to be guidelines around it and rules about how it runs.
Yeah,
and I think that all in all, we're doing a pretty fine job of that. Everybody all around, our owners make all in all fantastic decisions and really do a great job is what they do.
Yeah,
and I think we have a really respectful environment where we make it work. Is it easy? It is not easy.
That is what I think is most impressive. We have a very respectful environment to work in, and I know that. You wouldn't expect us to say anything else. Anyone who's listening is going to be like, well, of course they're going to say that. But frankly, we probably wouldn't say anything about it at all if it wasn't
talk
that
about
way.
It. Yeah, you wouldn't
but
talk
it,
about it.
It's impressive for the growing pains that any young business has, you know, the struggles that are definitely there, the amount of work that has to go in, mistakes, all this stuff that happens, the cohesiveness of the ownership group and the respect they have for the management decisions that we're making here have been phenomenal, and I think are a good reason why we're where we are.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. So I guess if you're listening, I don't know if you know. It's hard for me to step out of it. I don't know if hearing what Randy said is like, wow, that's cool, or not a big deal. For me, it was huge.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to boil it down to a really what was important about it is it did two things. I think in my mind, it. A, reinforce some decisions we made early on about the way the management structure should be for the organization.
Yep.
And that was important. You know, as you said, Lindy and I worked a long time on corporate structure and the operating agreements, and you worked a lot on how we do governance and provide oversight for things. And I think what his comment said was that these decisions... He reinforced that those decisions are right and that we need to continue down this path.
And he even said he was impressed.
Yeah.
That, you know, as we were walking out, he said, you know, impressive that you got that. Because normally, he's like, normally it would be a single entity with all these owners doing all this stuff and they, no operating agreement that said anything, but they could do whatever they wanted and they can't.
Yeah.
You know?
And then two, I think what it did for me anyway was to say, to make us take a harder look at everything we do. Because we had a general idea that we wanted to be business-like about it and all that stuff. We're still running a sport, and there is still emotional investment. But it made us take a step back and say, what do we need to do planning-wise, strategy-wise, that takes us in a direction where this is run like a business and where eventually we're able to provide the kind of returns that we know we can to our investors and the kind of work environment and lifestyle we know we can to the people that work here. And how do we treat it like that? And it was inspiring on that level because he's saying, not only is it possible to do that, you should do it. It has to be done
that way.
And you, as the people running this, the people managing this, you have to figure out how to do that. And that was a call to action in a way and something that made it, I think, lit a fire.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
Okay. So our time's up. Send us your tweets about questions you would have about the cufflink side of the world. If you have especially more questions around the Randy type things, how to set up a business, how to set up a sport, love to answer it. Love to hear your thoughts out there. We love tweets. Okay. Next week, We're going to have Sean Carpenter of AltiPhotos on, and we're going to talk about how Nick Darling is also not an athlete.
Yep, that's true. That'll come up.
And I felt good about that.
Yeah, I like really that. Thank you. That. Appreciate that.
Okay. Yep, we'll have lots more fun stuff to talk about. And
At Nick Darling, at Jeff Snader, at Cleats Cufflinks. Hit us up. Or Cleats and Cufflinks at MLUltimate.com.
Let's do it. We're off.
We're off. Out of here.